to the Connect Kindness podcast, where we connect people with organizations to inspire kindness. I'm your host, Crystal Aziz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tim Evans. Thank you for joining us on the Connect Kindness podcast today. In today's episode, we interview Misa Nguyen and Jenna Cooper with United Against Human Trafficking.
We had a great episode with Jenna and Misa, and they shed some light on the definition of human trafficking. And they also talk about their prevention program as well as their outreach program to help out individuals who are wrapped up in the web of human trafficking. This is a fantastic interview, and can't wait for our listeners to hear it. So without further ado, this is our interview with Jenna and Misa of United Against Human Trafficking.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Connect Kindness podcast today, Jenna and Misa. We're excited to have you guys. You know, I wanted to start off with you guys telling us a little bit about United Against Human Trafficking and why it was founded.
This is Misa here, a director of education at United Against Human Trafficking. And our agency was actually founded to really fill a gap, to fill a need. We were founded in 2005, and this was about 5 years or so after the federal law was enacted. It's called the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. That's really where we draw our definition on human trafficking. But in that instance, you know, there was a lot of energy. People were advocating, wanting to have a law to criminalize this crime in the first place so that we can begin to combat it. However, we were realizing that there wasn't necessarily people who knew about this crime, first of all. In essence, we were really founded to fill that gap, to educate others, to help make people more aware that this crime even existed so that we can identify victims and survivors of this crime. So that's what we do today. We provide education, awareness, and outreach, trying to create a community that is informed, but also to directly reach those who could be vulnerable or have been victimized by human trafficking, connecting to services.
That's amazing. Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about the different types of human trafficking?
So human trafficking is a complex, multi-layered issue. The simplest way we can break it down is it affects someone who is forced, defrauded, or coerced into providing some kind of labor or service against their will. So what that is most commonly exemplified in our society is someone who's forced into prostitution, otherwise known as sex trafficking. So they're forced to sell a commercial sex act or sell a sexual act for something of value, or it could be simply someone forced to work. So that could be in a convenience store. It could be in a restaurant, washing dishes. It could be someone who is a nanny or a caretaker in a neighborhood in a suburb of Houston. Those are the main types that we focus on as defined by our federal law, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. But we do have other crimes that can be, or other parts of human trafficking that can be considered globally when you look at the just entire scope, such as forced marriage, child soldiering. Like I said, it's a very complex issue that you can really dive into in many different ways.
Yeah, I was blown away by just the amount or how many different types of human trafficking that there are. And I'm sure it's hard to identify people that are in that web of human trafficking. But how are you helping those people who are currently in the web of human trafficking?
Yeah, so this is Jenna here. So really great question, right? So as Misa said, this issue is really complex. And what we know of people who have been victimized is they very rarely come forward. So what United Against Human Trafficking does is we try to go out into these vulnerable populations, into these different systems that we know trafficked persons can be. We know that they're engaging healthcare and they're in the criminal justice system. We know that trafficked persons are in the child welfare system, but yet they're still going unidentified. So we've created a few different outreach programs to meet the unique needs of these individuals. So what that looks like for us is we go to the street corners to engage day laborers so that we can teach them about their rights, because we know that the immigrant and refugee community is so heavily targeted by traffickers, especially after natural disasters such as Harvey that we had last year. So there was a really big push in us going out there and disseminating information, resources, and also PPE equipment, so it's like personal protective equipment such as goggles and masks and gloves, Then we also target and try to connect with the homeless population. We've partnered with several amazing organizations here in the greater Houston area, such as the Covenant House and Search, the Beacon, Lord of the Streets, you know, and the list goes on. But we go and we connect with the clients that they're serving. We go and just want to provide information, talk to the individuals, because we know that when someone is on the street, the chances of them coming in contact with a trafficker significantly increases. So we want to provide necessary tools for them to not only protect themselves, but also know who to call if they find themselves in a trafficking situation. So in addition to the outreach opportunities that we engage in, we also created supportive services so that we can go into these different systems and really provide education, but also teach coping strategies that can help people become empowered to identify. Because not only do trafficked persons very rarely come forward and self-identify, but anyone who's really experienced some sort of violent crime or some sort of abuse. And we know that when someone has experienced trauma in their life, the chances of them being exploited are that much higher. So with our supportive services, we go into the jails, we go into the detention centers for youth, we go into residential treatment facilities and work with kids who have gone through the foster care system. And we are able to provide a 10-week program where we talk about things like healthy versus unhealthy relationships. We talk about safety planning. We talk about trauma and what that does on a person's brain and how that really affects the way that they're able to respond to different situations. So through that, we've actually been able to identify 39 trafficked persons just within our supportive services within the last year.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So we're doing what we can to just come up with innovative and creative strategies that we can just get out in the community and identify. And then once we're able to identify, we use our large network of services to try to plug them in there and get them what they need.
That's fantastic. You know, not only are you guys assisting people who are already in human trafficking, but you also have really strong programs in place to prevent it from happening. Can you share more about those programs?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the biggest ways that we try to prevent trafficking from happening is actually going into the schools and working with young people, really teaching them about human trafficking, but breaking it down into like this really easy concept or just like easy to digest. Because, you know, as Misa said and how we've been talking about, human trafficking is such an intense issue. So how are we going to talk with young people about this crime that adults sometimes get confused about? So we go in and we use one of really, really great prevention program that was developed by one of our partners. They're called Love 146. The program is called Not a Number. And what we do is we go and we teach them about trafficking, but we do things like internet safety, right? Like the internet, I think, in my opinion, is one of the most scariest places because you have all these social media platforms that traffickers are regularly visiting because they know kids are attached to their phone. Mm-hmm. And kids don't necessarily think about the long-term consequences of maybe sharing something that they shouldn't share. And it's really easy for a trafficker to, you know, find out that a kid is having a fight with his parents, or a kid has a younger sibling, or the kid wants to, you know, meet up. And it's really easy for traffickers to like swoop in and just be that support that that person, that young person needs at that moment. So we do a lot of safety planning. We do a lot of conversation about power of language, what kids are exposing themselves to through social media, music, movies, video games, and how that really warps their perception of social norms and how to stay safe. We also offer awareness workshops. And then in addition to really focusing on the kids and protecting the kids, we also want to train the frontline professionals who might come in contact with not only young people who could be trafficked, but also adults. So we offer frontline professional training. So we work with law enforcement, we work with social service providers, educators, healthcare providers, anyone who will really listen to us, we want to go and we want to train them so that they know what is human trafficking. They know the types of trafficking and not stay in this realm of just like human trafficking is just sex trafficking, but they really also understand about the whole labor side. And then we also want to make sure that they know how to effectively spot a trafficked person and know how to respond. How do they engage? How do they take a trauma-informed approach when asking questions so that they don't re-traumatize or victimize this person in this really terrible situation? And also prepare them with the resources so that they can make those calls and that referral to help someone out of the situation. So we do a lot of things to try to prevent trafficking from happening and really preparing as many people as we possibly can to help prevent trafficking. But if trafficking is occurring, they know how to respond.
That's great that you guys are taking the full circle of it. We're teaching the youth, we're teaching the people involved with, you know, the community all the time. Like, that's how you make an impact. You know, you guys have thought about every single possible way, even technology, like you said, with the social media. That's so huge nowadays, and it's easy to get involved with like Tinder or things like that. You don't know who you're talking to. You're so right about that.
Absolutely. And kids are so technologically savvy, and all these apps that are constantly popping up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also really important for parents to know how to keep their kids safe. So we also provide parent workshops so that we can educate parents on like constant introduction of all these different apps with mm-hmm. their youth, and how to continue the conversation, and how not to be afraid to have conversations with their youth so that we can keep them safe.
I totally get it. You know, one thing that was super surprising whenever we were really looking into United Against Human Trafficking was the amount of talk in Houston and why Houston was so prevalent for human trafficking. Can you guys talk about that?
Sure. The origins of that is really due to an academic research study. We don't have to go into all that mumbo-jumbo right now, but essentially what it did identify was helpful in giving us insight to what are the precise factors that cause cities like Houston to be prevalent in terms of this crime. And so a couple of reasons for that. Location, where we're located in proximity to Mexico border, as well as our transportation networks allow traffickers to transport victims in and out of our city very easily. And then our diversity of population, as well as our sprawling metropolis. You know, we have about 13 different counties mm-hmm. or so that are affiliated with what's known as the Houston area or the Houston metropolitan region. And so traffickers can take advantage of that. They can bring victims in, have them blend very easily with the local population, not arousing any kind of suspicion from the neighbors or, you know, from a nearby business. We're used to seeing people who don't necessarily look like us or people who are traveling from different places. And that's, you know, that's the norm here. But we also have different municipalities. So if you go from one county to another or city to another within the Houston region, there are different laws that govern those different areas. So business owners can function differently. You might be able to open one kind of business here, such as a sexually oriented business or explicit business in one county versus another, because they don't have as strong regulations around those types of industries. So traffickers are very intelligent individuals. They can take advantage of these different types of business regulations even. And then we have a large immigrant population. So Jenna was speaking earlier about our outreach to day laborers as a population and mentioning that refugees and immigrants are particularly one of the more vulnerable populations to being exploited. And so within that, traffickers know like they can just prey on people who are looking for a job, looking for opportunity. And they say, hey, I can provide that for you. And so it could be that simple hook. What we really more recognize as and classify as fraud that can lure someone into a trafficking situation so easily.
You know, as Tim and I continue to grow Connect Kindness, we're starting to build these relationships with organizations that are dealing with topics harder than others. Human trafficking is a dark and heavy subject, but you guys are choosing to shine light on it. Can you share a success story of someone that you possibly impacted that was a victim of human trafficking?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned before, we had created supportive services. And so what we do is we go into these different facilities and we offer this trauma-informed, survivor-informed 10-week program where we're really just trying to build trust and show consistency, because that was something while we were developing the program, we were, you know, talking to some survivors that we work with, and, you know, we asked them what could have been in place to help you maybe get connected to services at an earlier part in your victimization. And they kept on saying that there was a lack of love, there was a lack of trust, and a lack of consistency. So we really, really took that to heart and really wanted to create a program that will create that space to have a person come forward. And so through this program, we've had great success, and we've had individuals who are going through the jail, the criminal justice system, both adults and both minors, who really take to the program. At first, they're unsure. You know, they're trying to test us out. It's like, who are these people coming in trying to talk to us about trauma? And we respect that. But, you know, after time and after going, you know, week after week and just showing that, we just want to support them. Like, we are here not to judge. We are not here to try to rescue you or save you, but empower them so that they can use their voice and seek the help that they need, or know that there is a better way of life out there for them whenever they're ready. And so I have some quotes that I wanted to share about how powerful this program really has been in the population that we work with. So one was from a 19-year-old girl who went through our Real Talk program, the supportive services that I just mentioned. She was going through the criminal justice system. And so she said that, I feel like you guys really care about our situation. I'm 19 years old and I didn't think that anyone cared. Wow. That's just really powerful and shows that, you know, they haven't necessarily had that access to support, whether that's through their family or their community, you know, going through life and not necessarily knowing that you have someone to have your back. You know, that just really leads to so many vulnerabilities, and that's a great opportunity for traffickers to just swoop right in and fill those gaps, you know, create those relationships and that support system that someone, you know, might not have. And as Misa was mentioning, with that fraud, that force, and that coercion, you know, it's really easy for traffickers to build those fraudulent relationships and really use that to their advantage. Another quote that I have is another individual going through our Real Talk program. She was in a residential treatment facility that's geared towards youth who are in the child welfare system. And she said, throughout the program, I was able to share things that I have never shared before. This group reminded me that I have so much to live for. So again, like another powerful quote of how this program and the work that we're trying to do is really to build these individuals up so that they know their self-worth and they know their value and they know that, you know, they don't need to fall victim to these traffickers.
The work that you guys are doing is so emotional. Like, so how do you keep the emotions aside when people are talking to you, opening up to you about stuff that they've never told anyone else?
It can definitely be challenging. We have some fantastic social workers on our team who are doing this work. So they've been trained to know how to navigate these really difficult conversations when someone's disclosing all of that. But we also have a really, really powerful team. We have a team of 14 here at UAHT, and we really rely on each other, you know, recognizing that we're not alone in this fight, and we have created a really, really great support system so that when we do have these closures, we can really talk through it. And we use it as motivation. You know, we're here to really provide support in the community in various aspects. You know, it's not just the supportive services that we got, that we get people to share their story, but we've also been in the community doing an HT 101 where someone in the audience has come forward and shared their victimization. So you never know where you're going to hear a story, but we definitely try to create a really strong support system within our organization so that we can use these stories as empowerment and really rely on each other to come together to help to fight the issue.
And I'll add as well that, you know, human trafficking, of course, is a severe, complex. It's an issue that it's easy to get bogged down and depressed or feel frustrated that, you know, more could be done. Of course, there is more that can be done. We're only
18 years into fighting this crime mm-hmm. in the United States and in the world. So we have a long way to go. Mm-hmm. And I think part of what I was going to say unites us, part of what brings us together as staff and a team, and it also, you know, helps us go out, as Jenna was saying, and, mm-hmm. and deliver these information sessions to community members to expose them to this issue, is that we have hope. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, while this crime is horrible, it's such enormous trauma that's being done to even one individual, let alone multiple individuals who are being trafficked by a single trafficker or group. But it, there is hope in our work in knowing that if we are able to reach more people through mm-hmm. our supportive services programs to help people identify their vulnerabilities or through their experience, if they've experienced abuse or they've experienced to the severity of abuse of human trafficking, or talking to people and helping them to realize that, hey, I might have actually encountered a victim of human trafficking in my professional work or in my neighborhood. Those moments are what really give us the inspiration to move forward with our mission.
That's amazing. You know, you guys are doing so much. Just listening to y'all, just the programs, everything that y'all are offering, y'all are making a huge, huge impact. And I just want to know, what is something that I can do or our listeners can do today to help the fight against human trafficking?
Absolutely. There are a few ways that anyone can get involved even today, you know, hearing this podcast and being so moved. First and foremost, of course, as a nonprofit organization, we always need funding and support. We grew from a team of 2 when we started to now we have 14 individuals, and obviously that growth did not happen overnight. It took a lot of hard work, and it continues to do so. So we continue to need the community support to come behind us and enable us to continue to do this amazing work. So if you can donate your time, your money, you know, in whatever ways, whether it's $5 or $50 or $50,000, you know, anything.
Gladly accept it all.
We will. We are very good stewards of our finances. But even beyond that, you know, time. I think a lot of individuals, especially in this day and age, it's difficult to stretch your dollar. So maybe you don't have the funding or you don't have a few dollars to spare. That's okay. We have volunteer opportunities. We have ways that we go out and, as an extension of our education programs, or we try to spread awareness by going to talk to business owners or just going to talk to everyday individuals about, hey, you know, this is human trafficking. This is the reality of what's facing, and here's how you can respond in calling this number, or, you know, really approaching a situation differently than you would have had in the past. So we have various volunteer opportunities like that. Or maybe you're not a fan of talking to people. Okay. You can also help out in our office. I mean, you know, a lot of people think that, oh, I'm not a social worker, or, you know, I can't do what law enforcement does. Well, I would say to them, neither can I. But what I can do are use my talents. So, you know, we need photographers. We need graphic designers. We need people who are professionals, maybe in healthcare, that would volunteer their time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many diverse needs even beyond our organization. We network with at least 50 other organizations through our Houston Rescue and Restore Coalition, who either directly or indirectly serve victims of human trafficking and survivors of trafficking, and they have various needs. So there's such a connectivity here when you just start to really open up people's possibilities of like, hey, I didn't know that I could use my talents in this way. You know, if those ways aren't enough to motivate you, there's even one more that we can offer, and that is actually something that people do every day, which is shop. You know, everyone needs to go out and get things to live, right? We actually have been champions and been really trying to find various and diverse solutions to trafficking. And one of the ones that we've uncovered in the past few years is a concept called fair trade. Have y'all heard about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I wasn't familiar with it until I started reading into it, and I was so interested. I was like, this is awesome. I need to start shopping like this.
I know, it's crazy. So fair trade as a movement is actually its own individual movement, but we joined alongside them just, you know, maybe since 2011, 2012, we've been championing this as a potential solution. But essentially, it's a concept where a product supply line has not been touched by exploitation, forced labor. And so in that way, when you purchase a product that has the certification or label of fair trade, and if you're wondering what kind of labels, there are actually several different certifications that qualify and meet the standard. But when you can do that, you are ensuring that you are supporting a product that isn't exploiting someone else. And in fact, we've even seen the benefits of paying someone a fair and living wage without exploitation. They're able to contribute to their communities. And it's actually a tool that not only supports those, you know, in giving them opportunity, but it prevents someone from being vulnerable to the lures of a trafficker, and they're able to give back to their very own community. Mm-hmm. So it's an incredible experience. And you know, we did an assessment even as we started working on this movement in the early, you know, 2010s beyond. Since then, we found that, you know, in every major grocery store, whether you have a Kroger's by you, a Randall's, a Central Market, HEB, I mean, you get the point. Essentially, you can find these products. It's coffee, it's tea, it's chocolate, sugar. We are home to actually a local purveyor of fair trade sugar. They even produce, I think, some kind of syrup. I've been to the grocery store and I was like, I don't even know what coconut sugar is, but apparently that's the thing that Wholesome Sweeteners makes. So, you know, it's really cool when you start diving into this work, and or you start drinking Honest Tea and you start figuring out, you know, hey, there's a label on this box and I didn't even know I was supporting fair trade, but I am.
I've seen it with coffee before.
Yeah, more and more snacks and companies are really getting into it. Mm-hmm. There's like a little logo that you can look for. It's like a little person. It's like green and bluish.
Any of your listeners are really into that and really want to find out more, they can definitely get more education by going to fairtradeusa.com. I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but Fair Trade USA is the biggest body that really oversees this process in the United States. But even if you can't purchase something like that, and then people often wonder, you know, am I going to have to pay $5 extra? Am I going to pay $10 extra? It's really not that much more. I've seen it like $1 more, or sometimes when it's on sale, it's the same price. Mm-hmm. Trader Joe's is a great grocery store outlet of which, you know, joined the Houston market in the last few years. They try to use fair trade goods wherever possible. So they don't necessarily carry the fair trade label, but their business practices speak to such. I mean, Nordstrom's is catching on and carrying some of these goods. So we have major retailers who are listening to consumers. And if you are advocates in your community, you can actually make this real change happening. We're seeing it in real time today.
That is awesome. Yeah. Thank you all so much for being on the podcast. You know, like you mentioned, you guys are looking for web designers, photographers, pretty much anybody that has a unique talent that can help. Or how do they get in touch with United Against Human Trafficking?
Beyond listening to this podcast, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
Yes. Well, they can definitely reach us online at uaht.org. That's the acronym for our organization, United Against Human Trafficking. And they can also find us on social media. So we have Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can basically type in our entire organizational title. It is long, but hey, it'll get you there. You can find us on those major social networks.
Yeah, we do a really good job of really sharing what's going on, the latest in human trafficking research and just cases. And then we always update our event page on our website with coalition meetings, with introduction to human trafficking training, volunteer training, and some of our really awesome events that we have regularly each year, such as Shop Smart. So Misa just mentioned all about fair trade. We have one very large event coming up in November, and it'll have a variety of different fair trade vendors as well as local artists, and that's going to be on November 3rd at Onion Creek. So come visit us, say hi, and learn more about our organization.
And who knows, if you want to get educated, Jenna was actually, thanks for reminding me about that.
Yeah.
We do a series where we actually go out and go to libraries and hold these introductions to human trafficking. So that's one of the easiest ways to find us. And like she said, you can find us on our website, uaht.org.
Yeah, and come and have us come speak at whatever organization and agency that you work with. If you're a parent or an educator, if you're in healthcare, you know, we have our trainings and we take it on the road. So we come to you and you can learn more about the issue and how you can be an advocate and really help people who might be in a trafficking situation.
And just to speak on how available you guys are, Connect Kindness actually got in touch with you guys through Instagram, and we got an instant message back saying, yes, you know, this is who you need to be connected with. Shoot them a message because they are very active in all the social medias, and I know that's the easiest way to get in contact with people sometimes. So yeah. I'm definitely an advocate for you guys. Tim and I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to speak with us and speak on the topic. Definitely have shined some light on it and hopefully inspiring people listening to this today and in the future. So thank you guys. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you both so much. And thank you for really wanting to bring human trafficking education to your listeners. It's so important that we really understand and can be an aware community so that we can really end this issue.
Thank you so much for listening to the Connect Kindness podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Share Give Do. And please remember, the world is changed by your example, not by your opinion.